well, how is it then, or where did this phenomenon of consciousness come from? Right. So they would, this disbeliever, this atheist, would come up with an excuse and justify it in some way. Right. And the more objections we made to him and showed him these signs of life and consciousness and these kind of things, you know, the more he would come up with, you know, excuses. So we could easily justifiably also make and level the same objection to this belief or any other belief, right? So this is not really a valid or solid objection that could be leveled against God's existence. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at an objection to God's existence. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Muhammad, the seal of all prophets. Man was created on the morning of the sixth day. The time of worship commenced, and Adam began the rituals for his Lord. He, and after him, his progeny, performed such rituals. Religions appeared one after another. All of them represented one God, one path, one origin, and one end to mankind. Every messenger who was appointed by God to convey his message informed the people of the advent of the last prophet of God. In this sense, Buddha and Krishna said the very same thing which Noah, Abraham, Moses, John, Zoroaster, and Jesus said. One told the name of the final prophet, and the other spoke of his origin. One forecast the signs of his homeland, while the other described the characteristics of his language. In one way or another, each prophet informed mankind of the joyous news of the advent of the final prophet, the last messenger of the heavens. In the very beginning of history, God sent Adam, his first prophet on earth, to propagate and show the heavenly path to the inhabitants of this world. Thousands of years have passed ever since, and some people continue to follow him by residing exclusively near the riverbanks of the world. Zoroastrianism is one of the most ancient religions of the world. These days, most of its followers are found in Iran, India, and some regions of Central Asia. They possess a heritage several thousand years old. Like the prophets before him, Zoroaster also informed his followers of the coming of divine prophets. The religious scripts of Zoroastrianism refer to these messengers as Sotients. There are three Sotients who were foretold to appear after the Zoroaster. Alternatively, three Sotients, three beneficent personalities, will come one after the other. Throughout history, the followers of Zoroaster have been waiting for their arrival. They have searched for them everywhere.
Attilo, what brings you here?
They are visitors from the east. They follow the star. The star of the prophecy.
The prophecy of the Messiah?
The Messiah.
So far, only three Zoroastrian sages have succeeded in seeing the first sociant in Bethlehem. When the last prophet of God appeared in Hejaz, there were many Zoroastrians who saw the signs of the second sociant in him. They joined him in large numbers and became his followers and helpers. However, there are still many Zoroastrians who are keenly waiting for the arrival of the third sociant. They hope that this universal reformer will appear and make the world a utopia. In India, the land of many creeds, there are several mysterious religions spread out in the vast jungles and mountainous regions. You find religions such as Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism, and Sikhism. Though in some case, the followers of these religions have become deviated from the right path. The depth of meaning and spirituality that these religions reveal is indicative of man's inherent tendency to establish a close relationship with an infallible creator and worship him. Historical roots of Hinduism are spread over thousands of years. Mysterious ascetics with wonderful conducts live all over India, in colorful shrines and dark temples in legendary jungles. They make the unspeakable things of this mysterious land even more mysterious.
God is one only. Even in India, in the Hindu philosophy, God is always one. But his manifestation is many.
This historical religion has several holy books as guidelines for its followers. These books are full of strange and unsaid mysteries. Among the sacred books of Hindus are the Puranas. These ancient books contain the history of the universe, the genealogy of kings and heroes, and the foretelling of future events. In these books, we again witness indications of the coming of a spiritual teacher called Muhammad from a foreign land. To him is what Raja Bhuj respectfully says. I prostrate myself before you, O you, the pride of mankind, the inhabitant of Arabia. You have gathered a great power to eradicate Satan.
In one of the Puranas in India, Bhavishya Purana, it is also mentioned that Mahamud, Paigambar Muhammad, will be born in the Middle East, and he would cleanse the people of corruption and bad habits there, and he will bring a new wave of devotion. This is mentioned thousands of years ago in the Hindu text, in a Purana. It's one verse is there, one quote is there, that such and such a person, a prediction was done about that.
He will appear in a sandy desert in the land of Arabia. He will be known as the pride of humanity, and his name is Muhammad. What could be the secret that has been also mentioned in the holy books of Hindus, and of which the Hindu monks have spoken? The history of Jainism goes back about 600 years before the appearance of Christ. According to Jainism, salvation can only be achieved through the practice of asceticism. The tenets of this faith dictate that God has 24 avatars on earth. The last one of them will be born in a peninsula, and the name of his father is Vishnu Bhagat, which is the equivalent of Abdullah, and the name of his mother is Somanib, which is the equivalent of Amina. He is said to be taught by Bhagwan in a cave. Sikhs, who wear a unique turban on their head, are followers of another religion in India. But are there any hints about the Holy Prophet of Islam and his religion in the scriptures of Sikhs? In addition to the promise made thousands of years ago by Eastern religions concerning the advent of a prophet called Muhammad in Arabia, Abrahamic religions also foretell the arrival of a great prophet on earth in the last age of humanity. Moses and Jesus endured many difficulties on the path of propagating their messages. They promised the people about the advent of a man from among the descendants of Abraham. The New Testament clearly promises the arrival of a prophet after Christ. An example of this can be seen in the Gospel of John. Shortly before the advent of Christ, Roman oppression was continuously increasing. More and more innocent people were crucified every day. And the poor were made even poorer through forced taxes. In such conditions, a man called John, from the shores of the Jordanian River, claimed prophecy. He kindled both doubt and hope in the hearts of the Jews of his time. Perhaps they wondered whether he was Messiah, the prophet foretold to end pain and tragedy. On the same day, Jewish leaders sent a group of Levites to John to investigate the matter.
Who are you?
John confessed. He did not deny. He answered,
I am not the Messiah.
Who are you then?
Are you Elijah?
No, I'm not.
Are you the prophet?
No.
Then tell us who you are.
We have to take an answer back to those
when
who sent
Prophet
us.
John replied that he was not Messiah, Elijah, or the promised prophet, the delegates, who were considering the new prophet to be one of these three, asked him in wonder,
if you're not the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet, why do you baptize?
I baptize with water. But among you stands the one you do not know. He is coming after me, but I'm not good enough even to untie his sandals.
John's Gospel contains a marvelous secret within it. This secret, which reveals itself exclusively to those possessing wisdom and intellect, promises the advent of another prophet after Jesus. It speaks of a messenger for whom everyone is waiting. When Christ embarked upon his three-year-long mission, a great disagreement occurred among people.
And whoever believes in me should drink. As the scripture says, streams of life-giving water will pour out from his side.
This man is really the prophet. The Messiah will not come from Galilee.
Many people said that he was the Messiah promised by the Bible. However, others did not agree to this and said that perhaps he was the foretold prophet. What we can understand from John's Gospel is that apart from Elijah, two other people must also come to mankind. One is the Messiah, and the other is, for the lack of a better title, the prophet. But where is the prophet, who according to John's Gospel must come and has yet to come?
All the Christianity believe in the genuineness of Prophet Muhammad. I mean, believe that he was a prophet or not.
I do not know for all of Christianity. I have no doubt. I have no doubt myself. He is a prophet, and spoke the word of God with great love and kindness and beauty.
Yes.
The prophet is a symbol. The prophet is a human being. Human being, not God. He's a human being that he had great faith, a maximum of the faith, and he was in contact with God when he was alive. Mm-hmm. And he passed the messages of God to the people.
Will Durant writes, according to the documents discovered on the shores of the Dead Sea, people were awaiting the foretold prophet, whose appearance, along with that of the Messiah, was promised. But who is this prophet, and from where does he originate? In order to answer this question, we will have to go back and investigate his characteristics, as found in the Old Testament. According to the Old Testament, Moses saved the children of Israel from the Egyptians' bondage and made them cross the sea. He guided them during the course of 40 years of wandering in the Sinai Desert until they reached the banks of the Jordanian River. Nevertheless, the Israelites continued their lives as nomads. For this reason, Moses gathered them all and said, God told me, I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren like unto thee, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all, that I shall command him, and it shall come to pass that whosoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him. The Bible only recognizes the children of Ishmael as the brethren of the Israelites. Hence, the foretold prophet must have been raised among the brethren of the Israelites. He must have been given a book like that of Moses, and he must have come with a religious law like that of Moses. The question stands, to which prophet can all these qualities be attributed? Priest James Dow writes in the Collins Dictionary of the Bible, the only personality for whom the forecast of Torah can fit is Muhammad, because he is the only person who resembles Moses and has a book and a religious law. The prophets came one after the other and guided humanity towards the truth. Every prophet promised his followers about the advent of the last messenger of God. Muhammad, about whom the Puranas had promised. The second sotient of the Zoroastrians. A prophet from Arabia. The last avatar riding on a horse. The prophet resembling Moses and the descendant of the brethren of the Israelites. And the prophet mentioned in John's Gospel. Who is he? In which land was he raised? In which era did he render as true the promise of all the prophets before him? After centuries of denial and defiance by the unbelievers, Muhammad, the son of Abdullah, titled as Ahmad, the seal of all prophets, from the house of Ishmael, appeared in the land of the Arabs to guide mankind, so that man may not remain in the darkness of ignorance. And now, on the threshold of another millennium, man continues the path of his predecessors in the persecution of the propagators of the message of God, those who decapitated Prophet John, put the cross on the shoulders of Christ, and mounted the Crusades, are once again continuing with their blasphemous persecution of the last prophet of God. They fed their ancient grudge. They despised the sacred. And driven to despair, they set fire to the truth and tried desperately to injure the prophet.
There is no God but God, and Muhammad is the messenger of God. There is no God but God.
We are declaring ourselves. God has told his messenger to declare Islam to all men.
Open the windows. Let the world hear.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
Iran and China have recently signed 20 cooperation documents and memoranda of understanding at a high-profile meeting in Beijing. The agreements entail cooperation in a diverse field, including crisis management, tourism, information and communications technology, environment, international trade, intellectual property, agriculture, exports, health, and medical sector, media activities, sports, and cultural heritage. China has strengthened its position as Iran's top trade partner in recent years. During the first 10 months of the current Iranian year, China has exported $12.7 billion worth of goods to Iran, and its imports from Iran stood at $12.6 billion. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote in this regard, Chinese President Xi Jinping recently met with Iranian President Dr. Seyed Ebrahim Raisi in Beijing, where the two leaders agreed on deepening Iran-China comprehensive strategic partnership. The two sides are expected to increase coordination under multilateral platforms such as the UN and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, and inject positive energy to regional and global peace. President Raisi's three-day visit to China, the first since he took office in August 2021, will accelerate the implementation of the 25-year agreement between the two countries, Chinese experts have said. This meeting between the two leaders will also guide bilateral cooperation to a higher level, underscoring the deepened mutual trust between the two countries, despite geopolitical uncertainties, they said. China has always viewed and developed its relations with Iran from a strategic perspective, she said to Dr. Raisi, noting that no matter how the international and regional situation changes, China will unswervingly develop friendly cooperation with Iran, push for new development of the China-Iran Comprehensive Strategic Partnership, and play a positive role in world peace and human progress. China supports Iran in safeguarding its sovereignty, territorial integrity, and national dignity, and supports its fight against unilateralism, hegemony, and external forces that interfere in Iran's domestic affairs and sabotage its stability, she said. According to Global Times, the Chinese side is also willing to deepen the comprehensive partnership by deepening cooperation in trade, agriculture, industry, and infrastructure, as well as expand cooperation under the Belt and Road Initiative. For his part, Dr. Raisi said, the time-tested friendship between Iran and China has become even firmer as time goes by. As two independent major countries, the Iran-China relations are based on the spirit of mutual respect, and they are sincere strategic partners worthy of mutual trust. Iran's commitment to deepening and upgrading the Iran-China Comprehensive Strategic Partnership is unswerving and will not be affected by any changes in the international and regional situation, Dr. Raisi stressed. After the meeting, the two leaders jointly witnessed the signing of a number of bilateral cooperation documents in the fields of agriculture, trade, tourism, environmental protection, health, disaster relief, culture, and sports, according to Xinhua. During the visit of Iranian president, the two sides will issue a joint statement, Xinhua reported. Experts said that in contrast to the U.S. waning influence in the West Asia-North Africa region, regional countries are seeking diversified relations with other countries, which conveys a positive significance for building a multipolar world free from U.S. hegemony. We'll be right back. Iran and China established a comprehensive strategic partnership during Xi's visit to Iran in 2016, since when the two sides have moved forward to promote the development of this partnership, including cooperation under the framework of the Belt and Road Initiative. The purpose of Raisi's visit to China this time is to further promote Iran-China relations and the implementation of the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership. Wu Saik, former Chinese Special Envoy on the West Asia region, told the Global Times recently. In 2021, Iran and China signed a 25-year agreement to enhance comprehensive cooperation in a range of fields. Under the deal, the two sides would tap the potential economic and cultural cooperation and make plans for long-term cooperation. The 25-year cooperation program, including energy, trade, and infrastructure, has faced obstacles, especially when the U.S. escalated sanctions on both Iran and China. The two sides will likely focus on how to advance practical cooperation between Iran and China amid the growing external uncertainties. Liu Zhangmin, a professor at the West Asia Studies Institute of Shanghai International Studies University, told the Global Times recently. Regarding the international situation, Iran and China have common or similar positions. The two countries oppose hegemony and unilateralism and emphasize their respect for the rights and interests of all countries, Raisi said in an article published on People's Daily recently. During the meeting with Xi recently, Dr. Raisi said Iran welcomes more Chinese companies to invest in the country and more Chinese tourists to travel there. Iran also firmly supports China's proposed Belt and Road Initiative, the Global Development Initiative, and the Global Security Initiative. Iran's National Development Plan and its look to the East strategy are highly compatible with the BRI, and deepened cooperation provides a guarantee for high-quality development that will accelerate Iran's economic growth and help consolidate its status in transport and energy. Zhu Yongbiao, executive director of the Research Center for the Belt and Road at Lanzhou University, told the Global Times recently. Zhu said, "Such deepened cooperation is significant for China, including ensuring energy security and boosting high-quality BRI projects." During the meeting between Dr. Raisi and Xi, the two sides also agreed to increase coordination on regional and global issues and maintain active coordination under the auspices of multilateral organizations such as the UN and SCO. With official approval from Tehran, Iran is one step closer to joining the SCO. As an important power in the region, Iran's admission into the SCO will help expand its influence, Wu said. During the meeting between the two heads of state, both emphasized a rejection of unilateralism, hegemony, and foreign interference in the domestic efforts of Iran. Chinese experts believe that in contrast to the U.S. declining influence in the West Asia region, China's proposed development and security initiatives will play a more active role in promoting peace and stability and resolving conflicts. She praised Iran's willingness to improve relations with its neighboring countries, supporting regional countries to resolve disputes through negotiations and playing a constructive role in regional peace and stability. China will continue playing a constructive role in resuming full negotiations in the Iran nuclear deal and supporting Iran to safeguard its legitimate rights, helping the nuclear issue to be resolved soon, he told Dr. Raisi. Compared with the U.S., China is perfectly capable of maintaining good relations with Iran, Wu said. First of all, China does not interfere in other countries' internal affairs. Second, China has always sought cooperation rather than encouraging confrontation. In the face of regional disputes, China has always played a role in promoting peace talks and easing tensions, he said. Also, Bloomberg noted Chinese leader Xi Jinping pledged to deepen ties with Tehran after meeting Iran's president, Dr. Seyed Ebrahim Raisi, in Beijing, weeks after the U.S. said it would increase pressure on China to stop buying Iranian oil. Meanwhile, Press TV reported Iran and China have a potential to triple the value of their annual trade to over $70 billion, according to a senior Iranian businessman who coordinates private sector trade between the two countries. Majid Reza Hariri, who chairs Iran-China Joint Chamber of Commerce, said in remarks published recently that Tehran and Beijing can capitalize on their growing political and energy ties to boost bilateral trade. He said trade between Iran and China has been stable in recent years despite U.S. sanctions targeting Iran's access to international markets. Hariri, in an interview with the official government newspaper Iran, said, "We have had around $24 billion worth of trade with the Chinese, even under the worst conditions of sanctions, and we can reach at least triple that figure." The businessman hailed China's policy of maintaining close economic relations with Iran despite U.S. sanctions, adding that trade with Beijing has been much easier for Iran compared with other trade partners since 2018 when Washington imposed its sweeping sanctions on Tehran. He said China has increased its purchase of Iranian crude oil despite U.S. bans, adding that the country even declared some limited state purchases of Iranian oil in its customs figures to show that it officially rejects the unilateral sanctions imposed on Iran.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is Zainab, and today we're going to discuss something very important with Professor Naqavi. Professor Naqavi is a faculty member at Al Mustafa University. Dear listeners, in this program, we try to answer your questions and issues that you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified progeny. Assalamu alaikum, Professor.
Alaikum assalam.
We have been talking about dignity in relation to parents and children. Now, we have some audience questions wherein there are mostly mothers. There's a mother who says that I often have fights with my husband. just because he either screams or beats my son in front of guests. So I would want you to have some advices for him.
So this is a very pertinent question regarding the maintenance of dignity of each other, especially the parents. So one thing which is important to make us, and we should understand that if we're to, the way we behave in between ourselves as parents, as spouses, as partners in front of our children, they'll just learn to behave in the same manner with us and with others. So.
Yeah.
So number one, the first consideration should be that the way we speak with each other, to each other, should be in a polite way, in a loving way, in a caring way, showing our love and respect for each other, caring for each other's feelings and thoughts. And if there is a difference of opinion, we should try to resolve that in a very amicable way. So that is basically what should be done. Now, if there's one of them, especially the husband, who does not even take care of the respect and honor of his wife in front of his guests, then that is a very, very negative attitude, and this has to be, it has to be curtailed, it has to be stopped, it has to be somehow
solved.
And the important thing is, yes. Now, the best way, the step number one would be if you are going to shout back and you're going to start to fight back, then the situation is going to become worse. So the first thing is let things cool down. If both of the sides start screaming at each other, then we will have a real fight. But as we always say, clapping is not possible without two hands. If one of us is getting upset or uptight about something and we're losing our temper, the other one should keep his cool or her cool and remain quiet, at least. If he or she cannot say something to soothe the other person, then at least one should keep quiet and not to feel offended or not to show his. Yes, the expression should show that we're not feeling good about it, but we should not fight back or try to give a reaction. A knee-jerk reaction would not be called for. So therefore, step number one, keep your cool. Don't let things get out of hand, especially in front of guests. And or even much better would be somehow say something in a way that makes him realize his mistake. And to, with love and care, I'm sorry if I accept your mistake, even if you're not, even if you've not made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
For example, he says, you bring in fruit for the guests, and it's the salt is too much or too little, and he starts saying, "Oh, what the hell? How bad food you've made!"
Mm-hmm.
Now this is. It may be bad, it may not be good, so the wife can accept that, yes, sorry, I was in a hurry or I made a mistake, I'm sorry about that. So you can cool down the situation by offering your apologies. That would certainly make the person realize that it shouldn't be continued.
All right. Well, Professor, we'll continue the discussion after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi. Professor Naqavi, before going to the break, we said that there's a father who misbehaves with a child in front of guests. You first of all said if the person is used to misbehaving with a wife, how he can tackle it or how she can actually tackle it. And now let's go back to how he can tackle the child in a better way or how this mother can behave or act there. The first thing you told us over here is that she has to maintain her cool.
Yes, she. Of course, there are two things which have to be taken care of. Number one, whether it's in front of guests or whether it is alone in both cases, one thing is for sure, that at least the importance of the husband or the father should be kept protected by the family. I mean, the wife can play the most important role by maintaining the position and the status, as we said, as the husband or the father has the position of the head of the family. So he is the head of the family by virtue of the fact that he is the bread earner and he has to take care of the family. So that position should not be jeopardized. So that is one principle or issue that has to be kept in mind by all the family, and the best person who can do that is the wife. So whether it's a misbehavior by the husband with respect to the wife, or it's misbehavior by the father to the children, in front of other children, in front of other guests, or even alone, here the wife cannot should not start reacting to what he is doing. Of course, there may be a situation where the husband starts hurting the child or hitting him,
yeah,
or giving him a spank or something. Oh, if it's just a spanking, he's telling
something in a loud tone.
To the extent that it is allowed, so that's not a problem. But if he's really in anger and he has lost his temper and he has felt offended by something that the child has done. Now, this is a difficult situation. He is not doing the right thing.
Yeah.
He is not expected to do that. But again, if the wife starts reacting to it, that will make the situation worse. So she has to somehow, number one, maintain that honor and respect of the husband and the father, and somehow take the child out of way of harm, out of the way of harm. And to somehow...
So if he's getting hit by father or getting slapped or something, she has to save him without...
Shield him to in some
without
way.
Without just reacting much, without...
Yes.
In a very lower tone, yes, she can actually... Yes.
She should come express. In between and say, okay, ask her child to leave the room maybe. So the situation is controlled and tells the husband, okay, and let's resolve this alone and let him be. But again... There's another issue. Yes, the temper, the losing of the temper by the father is not justified.
But
even then, there are some things that children may do which are really bad, really evil, really wrong.
And you are actually very sensitive when it comes to guests. You want everything to be okay, everything to be nice and normal, and then kids come in and they destroy it, and then
yes,
you also lose temper. So it's a very important topic. We'll discuss more on it after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi. Professor Naqavi, you were saying that if a child is being accused in the family, in front of guests, especially by the father, you said that first thing, sometimes children do certain things that a father is forced to, but you said he's only authorized what is allowed. He can actually maybe actually make his tempo or voice a little louder, but not hit the child or slap a child.
Of course, and then again, if the mother wants to intervene, so she has to be a little very careful about two things. Number one, as I said, the position and status of the father should not be hurt. Number two, it should not seem that the mother is defending his or her child regarding that offense. It may be something really wrong. It shouldn't seem that she is letting him off or trying to justify what the wrong deed he has done. No, that should also not be the case.
So here again, balance comes in between.
Yes, that's a very tricky situation. The child should not feel that I'm being shielded by or defended my mother so I can do whatever wrong I can.
She defended me.
So that is also a very difficult situation where you need to be very careful. So number one, the father should be, of course, in front of guests and such a scolding,
hitting the child.
It shouldn't be at all allowed. It shouldn't be, taken into consideration at all. The situation should be kept very cool and very in a relaxing manner. It should be taken care of. But normally children don't do such things in front of guests. They may make a mistake. They may not be eating what they should be eating properly, or they should take care of manners, or not speaking properly, or speaking out of line where they're not supposed to say anything. They start interjecting and they start disturbing the something which they're not in a position to say. So parents can get offended and say, "Oh, keep out of this." No, that should not be the case. Why not let them get involved? If everybody's sitting, then let us talk about something which everyone can participate in, and give the children some
space
to give their opinions. And
yeah.
That would be something which would offer you a situation where you can rectify them later on.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Professor, for being with us. The audiences, we have been discussing about the dignity and honor in relation to parent and children. And here we had a question which said that mother is. And here we had a question where a mother said that she gets often upset when she sees her husband scolding her child in front of guests. And Professor said, whether there are some men who often scold even mothers in front of guests. So Professor started with how this mother can behave as a wife, as a mother herself, and how she can actually balance things. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening. In case you want to listen to our program again, please go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. Go to the tab COI Call of Islam and you can find all our programs there. You can also find us on the social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam. If you had any questions, any more queries, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.